Chapter 7. Back through the tunnels they went, through cavern after cavern, through rhythmic noise, billowing shadow, and glaring blue light. Ramon walked leadenly, like an automaton, pulled along by Manek, the tether in his neck feeling heavy and awkward. The chill air leached the heat from his body, and even the work of walking wasn't enough to keep him warm. As he stumbled along, in the privacy of his mind, Ramon searched for hope. How long would it be before Elena noticed his absence? Months, at least. Or she might think he'd gone off again, down to Nuevo Janeiro without her, to file his reports and collect his fees and keep his money for himself. Or run off on a drunken spree with some other woman. Rather than start a search for him, she was more likely to work herself into a blind rage and go fuck some hairy prospector from a bush bar or rum shack in revenge. Likewise, Manuel Griego would expect him to be in the field for 3 or 4 weeks at the least. Ramon silently berated himself for talking about hunting and his fantasy of disappearing into the Sierra Hueso to live off the land. Manuel might assume he wasn't coming back at all, especially if he suspected, as he probably did, that Ramon knew that the cops were after him. The only ones who would look for him were the law, and the law would have followed him with public execution in mind. There was no one. That was the truth. He had lived his life on his own terms, always on his own terms, and here was the price of it. He was on his own, hundreds of miles from the nearest human settlement, captured and enslaved. If he was going to get out of this, he would have to find his own way out. Manek tugged at the Sahel, and Ramon looked up, aware for the first time that they had stopped. The alien thing pushed a bundle into his arms. Clothes. The clothes were a sleeveless, one-piece garment, something like pajamas, a large cloak and hard-soled slipper boots, all made from a curious, lusterless material. He pulled them on with fingers stiff from cold. The aliens were obviously not used to tailoring for humans. The clothes were clumsily made and ill-fitting. But at least they afforded him some protection against the numbing cold. It wasn't until his nakedness was covered and warmth began to return to his limbs that his teeth began to chatter. Manek led him down a bright white passageway to another great, high-vaulted chamber. Things the color and size of aphids swarmed across the floor, bumping into each other and into his legs, singing incomprehensible gibberish in high, sweet voices. In the center of the room squatted a bone-colored box, like the one that had destroyed his van. As they drew near, Ramon saw that the thing was not solid. Instead, a million tiny strands of dripping white and cream made a webwork of slats that shifted to create an opening and then close it behind them. The interior of the box was likewise only half solid, a wide, low bench that appeared intended for Manek's barrel-like form, and also a smaller area set into the wall where Ramon himself might sit, legs pulled up to his chest. Ramon waited leadenly while Manek examined the box, leaning in to run its long, slender fingers carefully over the controls. He could feel himself becoming dazed and passive, numbed by weariness and shock. He'd been through too much, too fast, and he was tired, more tired than he could remember being before. Perhaps the shot they'd given him, glucose or adrenaline or whatever it had been, was wearing off. He was almost asleep on his feet when Manek seized him, lifted him into the air as if he was a little child, and stuffed him into the box. He struggled to sit up, but Manek seized his arms, drew them behind his back, and bound them with a thin length of wire-like substance, then hobbled his legs before turning and sitting down in front of the controls. Manek touched a push plate, and the box rose smoothly into the air. Acceleration shoved Ramon's head sideways, pinning it at an uncomfortable angle. In spite of the terror of his situation, he realized that he was unable to stay awake any longer. Even as they rose toward the high-domed cavern roof, his eyes were squeezing shut, as though the mild G-forces that pulled with mossy inevitability on his bones were also drawing him inexorably into sleep. Above them, the rock opened. As Ramon's consciousness faded, drowning him in hissing white snow, he saw, beyond the hole in the stone, a single pale and isolate star. A freezing wind lashed him awake. He struggled to sit up. The box lurched to the left, and he found himself looking through the spaces between the woven slats, straight down through an ocean of air at the tiny tops of the trees. The box canted over the other way violently, and the darkening evening sky swirled around his head, momentarily turning the faint, newly emerged stars into tight little squiggles of light. They leveled off. Manek sat behind the box's control panel, unshakably, firm and cold as a statue, quills rippling in the bitter wind. Banking again, they fell at a slant through the air. He couldn't have been insensible for more than a minute or two, Ramon realized. That was the alien's mountain just behind them, the exit hole now irised shut again, and that was the mountain slope where he'd been captured, just below. Even as they coasted down toward the slope, the sky was growing significantly darker. The sun had sunk beneath the horizon some moments before, leaving only the thinnest sliver of glazed red along the junction line of land and air. The rest of the sky was the color of plum and eggplant and ash, dying rapidly to an inky blackness overhead and to the west. Armed and bristling with trees, the mountain slope rushed up to meet them. Too fast! Surely they would crash! They touched down lightly in the middle of an alpine valley, settling out of the sky as silently as a feather. Manek killed the box's engine. Darkness swallowed them, and they were surrounded by the sly and predatory noises of evening. Manek seized Ramon, and lifting him like a rag doll, dragged him from the box, carried him a few feet away, and dropped him to the ground. Ramon groaned involuntarily, startled and ashamed by the loudness of his voice. His arms were still bound behind him, and to lie upon them was excruciatingly painful. He rolled over onto his stomach. The ground under him was so cold that it was comfortable. And even in his sick and confused condition, Ramon realized that meant death. He thrashed and squirmed and managed to roll himself up in the long cloak he'd been given. It was surprisingly warm. He would have fallen asleep then, in spite of his pain and discomfort. But light beat against his eyelids where there had been no light, and he opened his eyes. The light seemed blinding at first, but it dimmed as his eyes adjusted. Manek had brought something from the box, a small globe attached to a long metal rod, and jammed the sharp end of the rod into the soil. Now the globe was alight, burning from within with a dim bluish light, emitting rhythmic waves of heat. As Ramon watched, Manek walked around the globe, the Sahel shortening visibly with each step, and came slowly toward him with seeming deliberation. Only then, watching Manek prowl toward him, seeing the wet gleam in the corner of its orange eyes as it looked from side to side, seeing the way its nose crinkled and twitched, the way its head swiveled and swayed restlessly on the stubby neck, the shrugging of its shoulders at each step, hearing the iron rasp of its breath, smelling its thick, musky odor. Only then did some last part of Ramon's mind fully accept the fact that he was its captive, alone and at its mercy in the wilderness. That simple knowledge hit Ramon with such force that he felt the blood begin to drain from his face, and even as he was worming and scrambling backward in a futile attempt to get away from his captor, he was losing his grip on the world, losing consciousness, slipping down into darkness. The alien stood over him, seen again through the hazy white snow of faintness, seeming to loom up endlessly into the sky like some horrid and impossible beanstalk with eyes like blazing orange suns. That was the last thing Ramon saw before the snow piled up over his face and buried him. and everything was gone. Morning was a blaze of pain. He had fallen asleep on his back, and he could no longer feel his arms. The rest of his body ached as though it had been beaten with clubs. The alien was standing over him again. Or perhaps it had never moved. Perhaps it had stood there all night, looming and remote, terrible, tireless and unsleeping. The first thing Ramon saw that morning, through a bloodshot haze of pain, was the alien's face. The long, twitching black snout with its blue and orange markings, the quills stirring in the wind and moving like the feelers of some huge insect. "I will kill you," Ramon thought once again. There was very little anger in it, only a deep, animal certainty. "Somehow, I will kill you." Manek hauled Ramon to his feet and set him loose, but his legs would not hold him, and he crashed back to the ground as soon as he was released. Again Manek pulled him up, and again Ramon fell. As Manek reached for him the third time, Ramon screamed, "Kill me! Why don't you just kill me?" He wormed backward, away from Manek's reaching hand. "You might as well just kill me now!" Manek stopped, its head tilted to one side to regard Ramon curiously, in an oddly bird-like manner. The hot orange eyes peered at him closely, unblinking. "I need food," Ramon went on, in a more reasonable tone. "I need water. I need rest. I can't use my arms and legs if they're tied like this. I can't even stand, let alone walk." He heard his voice rising again, but couldn't stop it. "Listen, puto! I need to piss! I'm a man, not a machine!" With a supreme effort, he heaved himself to his knees and knelt there in the dirt, swaying. "Is this Aubrey? Eh? Good. Kill me, then. I can't go on like this." Man and alien stared at each other for a silent moment. Ramon, exhausted by his outburst, breathed in rattling gasps. Manek studied him carefully, snout quivering. At last, it said,
"You possess retihue?"
"How the shit would I know?" Ramon croaked, his voice rasping in his dry throat. "What the fuck is it?" He drew himself up as much as he could and glared back at the alien.
"You possess retihue?" the alien repeated.
But it was not a question this time. It took a quick step forward, and Ramon flinched, afraid that the death he'd demanded was on its way. But instead, Manek cut him free. At first, he could feel nothing in his arms and legs. They were as dead as old wood. Then sensation flooded back into them, burning like ice, and they began to spasm convulsively. Ramon set his face stoically and said nothing. But Manek must have noticed and correctly interpreted the sudden pallor of his skin, for it reached down and began to massage Ramon's arms and legs. Ramon shrunk away from its touch. Again he was reminded of snake skin, dry, firm, warm. But the alien's powerful fingers were surprisingly deft and gentle, loosening knotted muscles, and Ramon found that he didn't mind the contact as much as he would have thought that he would. It was making the pain go away, after all, which was what really counted.
"Your limbs have insufficient joints," Manek commented. "That position would not be uncomfortable for me."
It bent its arms backward and forward at impossible angles to demonstrate. With his eyes closed, Ramon could almost believe that he was listening to a human being. Manek's Spanish was much more fluent than that of the alien in the pit, and its voice had less of the rusty timbre of the machine. But then Ramon would open his eyes and see that terrible alien face, ugly and bestial, only inches from his own, and his stomach would turn over, and he would have to adjust all over again to the fact that he was chatting with a monster.
"Stand up now," Manek said.
It helped Ramon up, and supported him while he limped and stomped in a slow semicircle to work out cramps and restore circulation, looking as if he was performing some arthritic tribal dance. At last he was able to stand unsupported, although his legs wobbled and quivered with the strain.
"We have lost time this morning," Manek said. "This is all time we might have employed in exercising our functions."
Ramon could almost imagine that it sighed.
"I have not previously performed this type of function. I did not realize that you possessed retihue, and therefore failed to take all factors into account. Now we must suffer delays accordingly."
Suddenly, Ramon understood what retihue must be. He was more baffled than outraged. "How could you not realize that I was sentient? You were there all the while I talked to the white thing in the pit."
"We were present, but I had not integrated yet," Manek said simply.
It did not elaborate further, and Ramon had to be content with that.
"Now that I am, I will observe you closely. You are to demonstrate the limitations to the human flow. Once we are informed, the man's path is better predicted."
It gestured around them.
"Here is the last of places the man was known," it said.
Its voice was deep and resonant. Ramon could almost think that the thing sounded sorrowful.
"We will begin here."
Ramon looked around. Indeed, there were signs of a small, improvised camp. A tiny lean-to, hardly big enough to sleep in, had been constructed with fresh boughs and tied together with lengths of bark. A fire pit, ringed by stone, showed ashes where the lawman had cooked something at the end of a fire-hardened stick. Whoever they'd sent after Ramon had spent enough time in the field to know how to survive with what came to hand. Good for him. Manek stood silent by the bone-colored box, the thick, fleshy sahel attached to its arm. Ramon looked at it, waiting to see what strategy the thing would adopt. The alien, however, did nothing. After a few minutes of uncomfortable silence, Ramon cleared his throat. "Monster? Hey, now we're here. What is it you want me to do, eh?"
"You are a man," Manek said. "Behave as he would behave."
"He's got tools and clothes, and he doesn't have a leash on," Ramon said.
"Your confluence will be approximate at the beginning," Manek said. "This is expected. You will not be punished for it. Your needs will lead you to a matched flow. That is sufficient."
"Speaking of needs and flowing," Ramon said, "I gotta piss."
"That will do," Manek said. "Begin by achieving piss."
Ramon smiled. "You stay here, then. I'll go achieve piss."
"I will observe," Manek said.
"You want to watch me piss?"
"We are to explore the banks which bound the man's possible channels. If this task is a necessity of his being, then I will understand it."
Ramon shrugged. "You're just lucky I'm not shy about this kind of thing," he said, walking to the nearest tree. "There's some men couldn't get a drop out, not with you watching them, eh?" The ground was rough, and Ramon's feet were tender. The long bath in the alien gel seemed to have softened away all his calluses. As he relieved himself against the tree trunk, he tried to make sense of the alien's behavior. "The limitations of human flow," it had said. For a being so impatiently concentrated on pragmatic results, Manek was strangely interested in Ramon's need to urinate, which ought to have struck it as irrelevant. It wasn't an activity that seemed important to hunting the fugitive, but it had not known that binding his arms behind him would discomfort him either. Perhaps the aliens needed him to understand what the habits of a man were. He was more than a hound. Merely by being human, he was a guide for them. Ramon stood for a long moment after his bladder was empty, taking the opportunity to turn his mind to strategy. He could not refuse the aliens. The demonstration of the pain his leash could deliver had convinced him of that. But there was a long history of labor protests in which things simply took a longer time and more materials than expected. Slowdowns. Ramon might have to be on the job for these devils, but he didn't have to be a good worker. He would move slowly, explain the fine points of pissing and shitting and hunting and trapping for as long as Manek would allow it. Every hour Ramon could waste was another one that the lawman had to make his return to civilization and send help back. How things would unfold once that had happened, Ramon didn't know. He shook his penis twice as long as was truly required, then let the robe drop back down to cover his knees. Manek's great head shifted, but whether this was a sign of approval or disgust, Ramon had no way to tell.
"You are complete?" Manek asked.
"Sure," Ramon said. "Complete enough for the moment."
"You have other needs?"
"I'll need to find fresh water to drink," Ramon said, "and some food to eat."
"Complex chemical compounds which can be harvested of their potential to facilitate flow and prevent pooling," Manek said. "This is Mehiban. How will you manufacture this?"
"Manufacture? I'm not going to make it. I'm going to catch it. Hunt for it. What is it you devils do?"
"We consume complex chemical compounds. These are iutholoi, made things. But the Ike I have would not nourish you. How do you obtain food? I will allow you to procure it for yourself."
Ramon scratched his arm and shrugged. "Well, I'm going to kill something. I'd try making a sling, maybe, killing a flatfur or dragon jay, but I've got this fucking thing in my neck. You wouldn't want to take it out of me, just long enough I can show you how this is done?" Manek stood unresponsive as a tree. "Didn't think so, monster. It's trapping, then. It might take a little longer, but it will do. Come on." In fact, the fastest and easiest thing would have been to gather up sug beetles, as he had the other night. He had seen a few even this deep under the forest canopy. Or a half hour of gathering would have gotten him enough Mayan berry to make a small meal. This far north you could pick them off the trees by the handful. Feeding off the land wasn't hard. The amino acids that had built up the biosphere of Sao Paulo were almost all identical to those on Earth. But that would have been simple, and would have allowed them to move quickly on to whatever the next phase of their hunt would be. So instead, Ramon taught the alien how to trap. His equipment had, of course, been destroyed with his van. If the thought had truly been that he should catch his dinner easily and well, that would have enraged him. Since his intention now was to stall, it only made him peevish. The bastard things had destroyed his van, after all. Ramon scrounged through the underbrush for the raw material of a snare. Whip vine, a few longish sticks seasoned enough to break, but green enough to bend first. A handful of Sao Paulo's nut equivalent, a sticky bowl that smelled of honey and resin, to act as bait. He was annoyed to find that all this hurt his fingers, which had been as tough as old leather. The syrup bath in which the aliens had soaked him must have melted away the calluses on his hands as well, leaving his fingers ill-prepared for real work. Through it all, Manek watched in silence. Ramon found himself explaining the process as he went. The pressure of the thing's unspeaking regard made him jumpy. When at last Ramon had the snares in place, he led Manek back into the underbrush to wait for some unsuspecting animal to happen by. It was unlikely to take long. The animals this far north were naive, unfamiliar with traps, never having been hunted by humans before, and so were easy to catch. Still, he would stall for as long as he could before checking the traps. They sat well in among the branches, Manek watching him with what seemed sometimes like profound curiosity, sometimes like impatience. but was likely an emotion Ramon had never felt or heard named.
"The food thing comes to you to be ended,"
Manek said in its sad, sonorous voice. "Not if you keep making a fucking racket," Ramon whispered. "It isn't as if we're getting its consent first."
"It is unknowing. This is nidutori."
"I don't know what that means," Ramon said.
"Interesting," Manek said. "You understand purpose and killing, but not nidutori. You are a disturbing creature."
"That's what they tell me," Ramon said.
"Under what circumstances do you kill?"
"Me?" Manek was silent. Ramon felt a stab of annoyance at the thing for spoiling the hunt, even as he reminded himself that it was all a play for time. He sighed. "Men kill for all sorts of reasons. If someone's going to kill you, you kill them first. Or if they're fucking your wife. Or sometimes men will be so poor they have to rob someone for money. That can go too far. Or if someone declares war, then soldiers go and kill each other. Or sometimes you just walk into the wrong bar and start acting like a cabron, where the wrong bastard can hear you, and he kills you for it." For a moment, he was back in the El Rey. He couldn't recall any more what precisely it was the European had said that started things. The details were all misty and uncertain, like a half-remembered dream. There had been a pachinko machine, its tiny steel balls bouncing crazily against the network of pins, and a woman with straight black hair. It hadn't been anything the man had said to Ramon. No one had liked the pendejo. Everyone had wanted to crack the man's ass the other way, but Ramon had been the one to do it. "Why did you kill him?" Ramon shivered. Manek's steady gaze seemed to peer into his soul, as if every truth and lie in Ramon's long, sorry life were written on his face. A sudden rush of shame possessed him.
"You have declared war on the food thing," Manek intoned, and Ramon's sudden guilt vanished.
Manek no more understood him than a dog could read a news feed. With an act of will, he refrained from laughing. "No," Ramon said. "It's just an animal. I need food. It is food. It's not killing, only hunting."
"The food thing is not killed?"
"Yes, okay, fine. You kill animals to eat them if you need food," Ramon said. Then, a moment later, "and also if they're fucking your wife."
"I understand," the alien said, and lapsed into silence.
They waited as the sun rose higher in the perfect blue sky.
Manek ate some of his ek, which turned out to be a brown paste, the consistency of molasses, with a thick, vinegary scent. Ramon scratched at the place in his neck where the sahel anchored in his flesh, and tried to ignore the emptiness of his belly. The hunger grew quickly, though, and in spite of his good intentions about stalling as long as he could, it was less than 2 hours later that he rose and walked out to check his catch. Two grasshoppers, almost identical to the locusts of Earth, but warm-blooded and able to nurse their young from tiny, fleshy nipples at the joints of their carapace. And a gordita, one of the fuzzy, round marsupials that the colonists called the little fat ones of the Virgin. The gordita had died badly, biting itself in its frenzy. Its spiky fur was already black with thick, tarry blood. Manek looked on with interest as Ramon removed the animals from the snares.
"It is difficult to think of this as having anything to do with food," it said. "Why do the creatures strangle themselves for you? Is it their tatakroida?"
"No," Ramon said as he strung the bodies on the length of carrying twine. "It's not their tatakroida. It's just something that happened to them." He found himself staring at his hands as he worked, and for some reason, his hands made him uneasy. He shrugged the feeling away. "Don't your people hunt for food?"
The hunt is not for food, Manek said flatly. The hunt is wasted on creatures such as these. How can they appreciate it? Their brains are much too small.
My stomach is also too small, but it will appreciate them. He stood up, swinging the dead animals over his shoulder.
Do you swallow the creatures now? Manek asked.
First they must be cooked.
Cooked?
Burned over a fire.
Fire, Manek repeated. Uncontrolled combustion. Proper food does not require such preparation. You are a primitive creature. These steps waste time. Time which might be better used to fulfill your Tata Kroida. Iuth alloy does not interfere with the flow.
Ramon shrugged. I cannot eat your food, monster, and I cannot eat these raw.
He held the carcasses up for inspection.
If we are to get on with me exercising my function, I need to make a fire. Help me gather sticks.
Back at the clearing, Ramon improvised a bow starter and started a small cook fire. When the flames were crackling well, the alien turned to look at Ramon.
Combustion is proceeding, it said. What will you do now? I wish to observe this function cooking.
Was that an edge of distaste in the alien's voice? He suddenly had a flash of how odd the process must seem to Manek. Catching and killing an animal, cutting its pelt off and pulling out its internal organs, dismembering it, toasting the dead carcass over a fire and then eating it. For a moment it seemed a grotesque and ghoulish thing to do, and it had never seemed like that before. He stared down at the gordita in his hand, and then at his hand itself, sticky with dark blood and the subtle feeling of wrongness he'd been fighting off all morning, intensified once again. First I must skin them, he said resolutely, pushing down the uneasiness, before I can cook them.
They have skin already, do they not? Manek said.
Ramon surprised himself by smiling.
I must take their skin off, and their fur. Cut it off with a knife, you see? Way out here, I'll just throw the pelts away, eh? Waste of money. But then, grasshopper pelts aren't worth much anyway.
Manek's snout twitched, and it prodded at the grasshoppers with a foot.
This seems inefficient. Does it not waste a large portion of the food, cutting it off and throwing it away? All of the rind?
I don't eat fur.
Ah,
Manek said. It moved up close behind Ramon and sank to the ground, its legs bending backward grotesquely.
It will be interesting to observe this function. Proceed.
I need a knife, Ramon said.
When Manek said nothing, he added,
The man would have a knife.
You will require one also.
Well, I can't do this with my teeth, Ramon said.
Wordlessly, the alien plucked a cylinder from its belt and handed it to Ramon. When Ramon turned it over in bafflement, Manek reached across and did something to the cylinder, and a 6-inch silver wire sprang out stiffly. Ramon took the strange knife and began cutting the gordita. The wire slid easily through the flesh. Perhaps it was the hunger that focused Ramon so intently on his task, because it wasn't until he had set the gordita on a spit and begun on the first grasshopper that he realized what the alien had done. It had handed him a weapon. The thing had made its mistake. Now it would die for it. He fought the sudden rush of adrenaline, struggling to keep the blade from wobbling in his hands, to keep his hands from shaking. Bent over the careful task of digging out the grasshopper's rear gills, he glanced at Manek. The alien seemed to have noticed nothing. The problem was, where to strike it?
Stabbing it in the body was too great a risk. He didn't know where the vital organs were, and he couldn't be sure of striking a killing blow. Manek was larger and stronger than he was. In a protracted fight, Ramon knew he would lose. It had to be done swiftly. The throat, he decided, with a rush of exhilaration that was almost like flying. He would slash the knife as deep across the alien's throat as he could. The thing had a mouth, and it breathed, after all, so there had to be an air passage in the neck somewhere. If he could sever that, it would only be a matter of remaining alive long enough for the alien to choke to death on its own blood. It was a thin chance, but he would take it. "Look here," he said, picking up the body of the gordita. With its legs and scales cut away, its flesh was soft and pink as raw tuna. Manek leaned closer, as Ramon had hoped, its eyes trained on the dead flesh in his left hand, ignoring the blade in his right. The heady elation of violence filled him, as if he was in the street outside a bar in Diego Town. The monsters didn't know that this thing they'd captured knew how to be a monster, too. He waited until Manek turned its head a little to the side, to better squint at the gordita, exposing the mottled black and yellow flesh of its throat. And then he struck. Abruptly, he was sprawled on his back on the ground, staring up into the violet sky. His stomach muscles were knotted, and he was breathing in harsh little gasps. The pain had hit him like a stone giant's fist, crumpled him and thrown him aside. It had been over in an eye blink, too quick to be remembered, but his body still ached and twitched with the shock. He had dropped the knife. "You fool," he thought.
"Interesting," Manek said. "Why did you do that? I pose you no danger, and so you need not defend yourself. I am not food for you, and so you need not kill me to eat. You have not declared war upon me. I have not gone to a bar, nor do I have money. I have not fucked your wife, and still you experience a drive to kill. What is the nature of that drive?"
Ramon would have laughed if he could. It was comic and tragic and deserving of his despairing rage. He levered himself up to sitting. Blood was smeared on his hands and chest from writhing on the corpse of the gordita.
"You," Ramon began, "you knew."
Manek's quills rose and fell. The evil, implacable orange of its eyes seemed to glow in the soft light that filtered through the forest canopy.
"The Sahel participates in your flow," it said. "It will not permit actions on your part that would interfere with your Tata Croida. You cannot harm me in any fashion."
"You can read my mind, then."
"The Sahel can prevent action that is Aubre before the action takes place." "I do not understand. Read my mind."
"You know what I'm thinking. You know what I'm going to do before I do it."
"No. To drink from first intentions would disturb the flow and affect your function. It is only when your intention expresses Aubre that you are corrected."
Ramon wiped his eyes with the back of his hand. "So you can't tell what I'm thinking, but you can tell what I'm going to do?" Manek considered him in silence, and then said,
"Every movement is a cascade from intent to action. The Sahel drinks from far up the cascade. The intention to act precedes the action. So you cannot act before I am aware of the action you are taking. Attempts to harm me cannot be completed and will be punished. You are a primitive being not to know this."
It tilted its head to stare more closely at him.
"Please return to the issue at hand. What is the nature of that drive? Why do you wish to kill me?"
"Because a man is supposed to be free," Ramon said, pushing ineffectually at the thick, fleshy leash at his throat. "You're holding me prisoner!" The alien shifted its head from one side to the other, as if the words meant nothing to it, and were literally falling from its ears. Manek lifted him easily and set him on his feet. To Ramon's shame and humiliation, the alien gently placed the wire knife back in his hand.
"Continue the function," Manek said. "You were flaying the corpse of the small animal."
Ramon turned the silver cylinder slowly, shaking his head. He was unmanned. He could no more defeat this thing than an infant child could best his father. He was so little threat to it that it would hand him a weapon with total unconcern. He felt the urge to drive the knife into his own chest and end this humiliation, but he pushed the thoughts away before the Sahel could exact its punishment. He sharpened another small stick, using the alien knife, impaled the small bodies upon it, and held the raw meat over the flame. In the beginning, he kept the gordita and the grasshoppers far enough back that the cooking went slowly. But as the scent of grease and cooked meat woke his own belly, he let the branch dip. The thin, stringy meat tasted better than Ramon had remembered. It was salty and had a rich, earthy taste. When he had stripped the small corpses to their thin, yellow bones, he wiped his hands on his robe and stood up. "Let's go. I have to find fresh water."
"The seared flesh is not sufficient,"
Ramon spat. "I can live for weeks without food," he said. "No water, and I'll die in days." It rose, and let Ramon lead the way through the forest to a cold, rushing stream, foaming white as it broke over stream-bed rocks. This far north, the glaciers fed the streams and eventually the great river, the Rio Embudo, that passed through Fiddler's Jump. As he squatted, cupping the numbing cold water to his lips, he imagined setting a message in a bottle to bob its way down to civilization. "Trapped by monsters. Send help." He might as well plan to make a flock of flapjacks fly him back to Diego Town. Dreaming was no better than dreaming. He wiped his mouth with the back of his hand and sat back.
"This is all, then?" Manek said. "Consume dead flesh and water. Emit piss. These are the channels that constrain the man."
"Well, he'll have to take a dump sometimes. Like pissing, sort of. And he'll sleep."
"You will do these things," Manek said.
Ramon stood, turning back toward the camp and the flying box. The alien followed him. "You can't just command those things," Ramon said. "It's not like I'm some kind of pinchy machine that you can press a button and I fall asleep. Things come in their own time."
"And the dumping?"
Ramon felt a surge of rage. The thing was an idiot. He was enslaved by a race of morons.
"It comes in its own time, too," Ramon said. "Then we will observe the time," Manek said.
"Fine."
"While we observe, you will explain free."
Ramon paused, looking back over his shoulder. Light dappled the alien's swirling skin, an effect like camouflage.
"You will kill to be free," Manek said. "What is free?"
"Free is not with a fucking thing sticking in my neck," Ramon said. "Free is able to do what I want, when I want, without having to dance to anyone's fucking tune."
"Is this dance customary?"
"Christ," Ramon yelled, wheeling on his captor. "Free is being your own goddamn man. Free is not answering to anybody for anything. Not your boss, not your woman, not the pinchy governor and his pinchy little army. A man who's free makes his own path where he wants to make it, and no one can stand in his way. No one! Are you too fucking stupid to understand that?" Ramon was breathing hard as if he'd been running, his cheeks hot with blood. The hot orange eyes shifted over him. The Sahel pulsed once, and a shudder of fear ran through Ramon, the presentiment of pain that never came.
"Free is to be without constraint."
"Yes," Ramon said. mincing the words as if he were speaking to a child he disliked. Free is to be without constraint.
And this is possible?
It asked. Thoughts and memories flickered through Ramon's mind. Elena. The times he'd had to scrape by without liquor in order to make the payment on his van. The police. The European. No, Ramon said. It's not. But you aren't a real man if you don't try. Come on! You're holding me back. If you're going to keep this fucking thing in me, the least you can do is keep up when I walk. At the camp, Ramon lapsed into silence, and the alien allowed him that. It seemed thoughtful and introspective itself, as far as one could judge that in a creature that looked the way it did. As the day shifted toward night, Ramon did indeed feel the call to relieve himself, and was humiliated as the alien looked on. "How about dinner, eh?" Ramon said briskly afterward, trying to shake off his shame. "More food. It's too late to go on today anyway."
"You've just emptied your bowels," Manek said. "Now you will fill them up again."
"That's what it is to be alive," Ramon said. "Eating and shitting. They never stop until you're dead. Dead men don't shit or eat, but living men have to, or they soon stop living." A thought struck him, and he glanced slyly at the alien. "The man will have to eat, too. The man you're chasing. You may as well learn how he'll do it. I'll show you how to fish."
"He will not set snares, as you did earlier."
"He will," Ramon said, "but he'll set them in the water. Here, I'll show you." Once the alien understood what Ramon needed, it cooperated. They rigged a crude fishing pole from a thin, dry limb snapped off a nearby ice root, and, after a tedious consultation with Manek, who took a long time to understand what Ramon wanted, a length of pale, soft, malleable wire supplied by the alien. A stiffer sort of wire was shaped into a hook, and Ramon stamped along the shore, turning over rocks until he found a fat orange gret beetle to use for bait. Manek's snout twitched with sudden interest as Ramon impaled the insect. Ramon led the alien to a likely-looking spot on the side of the stream and dropped the line. As he fished, Ramon stole glances at Manek from time to time. The alien stood and watched the water. For all the impatience it sometimes showed about getting on with their task, it seemed perfectly content to stand there, immobile and untiring, for as long as it might take. Halfway across the stream, Ramon glimpsed a flash of blue as a fish leapt from the water, but nothing took his bait. Never the most patient of men, he began to grow restive. To occupy the time, he began to whistle a silly little tune that Elena had taught him early in their time together, before the fighting had grown so bad. He could not remember the words that went with it, but that didn't matter. The song made him think of Elena, her long dark hair and her quick hands, calloused by endless hours in her little vegetable garden. She was a small, dark woman, very pretty, though her face was dotted with the craters left by some childhood disease. Sometimes Ramon would trace the marks with his fingertips, unconsciously, and then Elena would look away. "Stop," she would say, "stop, you remind me of how ugly I am." And then, if he hadn't had too much to drink, he would say, "No, no, they're not so bad. You are very beautiful." But Elena would never believe him.
"What is that sound you are making?" Manek demanded, shattering Ramon's reverie.
He frowned. "I was whistling, monster. A little song."
"Whistling," the alien repeated. "Is this another language? I do not understand, although I hear a structure, an ordering. Explain the meaning of what you were saying."
"I wasn't saying anything," Ramon said. "It was music. Your people, they don't have music."
"Music," Manek said. "Ah, ordered sound. I comprehend. You derive pleasure from the sequencing of certain patterns. We don't have music, but it is an interesting mathematical function. To order that which is random enhances the flow. You may resume whistling music, man.
Ramon did not accept the alien's invitation. He pulled in his line and threw it in again. The first cast brought up something Ramon had never seen. That wasn't odd. There were new creatures caught in the nets at Diego Town and Swan's Neck every week. So little yet was known about Sao Paulo. This was a bloated, gray bottom dweller whose scales were dotted by white, vaguely pustulant nodules. It hissed at him as he pulled the hook free, and with a sense of disgust he threw it back into the water. It vanished with a plop.
"Why did you throw the food away?"
Manek asked. "It was monstrous," Ramon said. "Like you." He found another beetle, and they resumed their watch on the river as night slowly gathered around them. The sky above the forest canopy shifted toward the startling violet of the Sao Paulo sunset. Auroras danced green and blue and gold. Watching them, Ramon felt for an instant the profound peace that the open wilderness always gave him. Even captive and enslaved, even with his flesh pierced by the Sahel, the immense, dancing sky was beautiful and a thing of comfort. A few minutes later, Ramon finally caught a fat, white bladefish with vivid scarlet fins. As he hauled it out of the water, he caught sight of Manek's curiously watching face and shook his head. "You don't have music, and you don't eat real food," he mused. "I think you are a very sad sort of creature." "What about sex? Do you have that much, at least? Do you fuck? What about that? Are you a boy or a girl?"
"Boy," the alien said. "Girl, these concepts do not apply to us. Sexual reproduction is primitive and inefficient. We have transcended this."
"Too bad," Ramon said. "That's taking transcendence too far. Still, at least I suppose that means I don't have to worry about you sneaking into the lean-to with me tonight, eh?" He grinned at the look of incomprehension on the alien's face and walked back to camp, Manek pacing silently at his side. There, he quickly rebuilt the cook fire and roasted the fish gently, briefly wishing he had some garlic or habanero powder to rub on it. Still, the flesh was warm and succulent, and when he had eaten his fill and smoked some strips of the fish and wrapped them in yerba leaves for the next day, he sat back on his heels and yawned. He felt very full and oddly contented, despite his perilous situation and inhuman companion. There were no more questions, no more obscure demands. When at last his body began to feel heavy, he pulled himself into the rough lean-to that the policeman had made, cradled his head on his arms, and let himself drift, always half aware that the thing was nearby and watching. Let it watch him. Every hour it spent here with him was another chance for the stranger who had been Ramon's pursuer and was now his prey. The man who the aliens hadn't made into a puppet, who hadn't killed the European. The one who was still free.